All right, so today we are diving into something pretty major happening right here in Queensland. You ready for this?
Absolutely. What we got?
The Anti-Discrimination Bill 2024. And we are going deep on this one. We're talking sifting through the actual bill itself, taking a look at the U.S. Bill of Rights for some extra context, even unpacking this ChatGPT conversation I found, which brings up some, well, interesting questions about all of this.
It's a pretty big deal, this new bill. It's going to completely change how we in Queensland, approach discrimination, bringing it right into the 21st century, you could say.
Yeah, and what I think is so interesting is this isn't some old piece of legislation that's been around forever,
Right.
right? I mean, the consultation period literally just wrapped up in March. So this is hot off the presses, guys, and it could have a very real impact on your life.
100%. This is actually a direct result of a huge review of the current Anti-Discrimination Act, which has been around since 1991, can you believe?
Wow, 1991.
Yeah, so it was definitely due for a refresh. It all kicked off with the Attorney General calling for this big review back in 2021, which then led to this really comprehensive report called Building Belonging. And that report became like the foundation for this whole new bill.
Building Belonging. I love that. It really emphasizes what they're going for with this new bill, right?
Right.
Making Queensland more inclusive for everyone.
Exactly. And they're not messing around either. This isn't a few little tweaks here and there. They're completely overhauling it, modernizing the language, expanding the scope to cover not just your typical discrimination, but also sexual harassment and vilification, which, let's face it, are becoming more and more prevalent, sadly.
Yeah, those are really important points. And it makes you realize just how much our understanding of these issues has evolved, even in recent years. So how does this new bill actually address those more contemporary forms of discrimination? What are the key changes that people should be aware of?
Well, one of the most significant changes is how this bill tackles the issue of vilification, which, as you know, has been a topic of intense debate and sometimes confusion.
Yeah, for sure. And speaking of confusion, I was looking at this ChatGPT conversation earlier, and someone asked if it's now illegal to offend minority groups in Queensland. And that got me thinking, where do we even draw the line? When does a good old-fashioned heated debate become something that's considered actual hate speech?
Yeah.
It's a tricky one, right?
You're telling me. It's a question that legal experts and really society as a whole have been grappling with for ages. And it's something this new legislation tries to tackle head on. They've actually broken down vilification into two distinct categories: unlawful vilification, which is dealt with as a civil matter, and serious vilification, which is serious enough to be a criminal offense.
Okay, so it's not just about saying something that someone somewhere might find offensive. There
Yes.
has to be more to it than just causing offense, right?
Exactly. It's all about intent. The law isn't trying to stop debate or make it impossible to disagree with someone. To be considered unlawful vilification, it's not enough to simply offend someone, even if that offense is deeply felt. The speech or action has to be deliberately intended to incite hatred, contempt, or severe ridicule towards someone because of who they are, their race, religion, gender identity, sexuality, and so on. It's about crossing a line from expressing an opinion, even an unpopular one, to inciting harm against others.
Okay, so let's break that down a little further, because I think a lot of people might be wondering, well, where's that line exactly? Like in the ChatGPT chat, there was this example of a Facebook post that said something like gender identity isn't appropriate and called it a sickness. Would that kind of statement just on its own fall under this new law?
That's where things get really, really interesting and honestly a bit tricky. Because simply expressing an opinion, even one that some people or a lot of people might find offensive or insensitive, that in itself might not be enough to be considered unlawful vilification. It all boils down to the specific language used, the context in which it's said, and whether a reasonable person would interpret it as a direct incitement to hate or discrimination.
It's a lot to unpack, that's for sure. And it's something we'll definitely be delving into further in a bit. But first, we need to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be diving even deeper into the specifics of this new law, looking at real-world examples and exploring just how far those protections go. Don't go anywhere. All right, so we're back. And, diving into these specifics of the anti-discrimination bill here in Queensland really got me thinking about how other countries deal with these same issues. Like, where do you draw that line between free speech and, actually preventing harm?
Yeah, it's a constant balancing act, isn't it? And different countries definitely come at it from different angles.
For sure. Like, we've talked about the U.S. Bill of Rights a couple of times, and I was looking at this ChatGPT thing earlier, and it seems like the U.S. has a very different approach. Like, way more emphasis on protecting free speech, even when that speech might be well, pretty offensive to some.
Yeah, the U.S., with their First Amendment, they really go hard on protecting freedom of expression. It's a cornerstone of their whole system.
Right, and that's where it gets really interesting, I think. Like in that ChatGPT chat, remember that example, the I hate trans people one?
Yeah.
Well, according to the chat, at least, it sounded like in the U.S., that kind of statement might actually be protected under their First Amendment, unless it directly called for violence, which is honestly kind of mind-blowing from an Australian perspective.
It is a pretty stark contrast, you've got to admit. It really highlights those fundamental differences in how our legal systems approach this whole balancing act between individual rights and the potential for, you know, actual harm.
So how do we do it here then, in Australia? I mean, how do we make sure people are free to express themselves without, like, being censored, but also protect people from harmful speech that, you know, actually incites hatred or discrimination?
Well, the key difference is that Australia, we don't have this, like, single, all-encompassing clause like the First Amendment that just gives this blanket protection for free speech. Our approach is a bit more, I guess you could say, nuanced.
So it's less about saying anything goes and more about saying, hold on, let's think about what we're saying here.
Exactly. It's about recognizing that words have power and that power can be used for good or for bad. And in Australia, we've generally decided that protecting people from hate speech, discrimination, vilification, that outweighs any perceived infringement on absolute freedom of expression.
That makes sense. But then there's this whole concept of compelled speech, which came up in that ChatGPT conversation, and it honestly got me a bit worried. Does this new law mean that people in Queensland can be forced to say things they don't actually believe just to avoid getting in trouble? Like, does it take away your right to just, I don't know, stay silent on certain issues?
Right, right. I get where you're coming from. It's a common concern, and it's understandable. But I want to reassure you and everyone listening, this legislation is not about forcing anyone to lie about their beliefs or say things they don't agree with. It's not about, you know, dictating what you must say. It's about drawing a line at speech that is specifically intended to incite hatred or violence against others.
Okay, so you're saying it's not about controlling people's thoughts or beliefs. It's about addressing the very real harm that certain types of speech can cause.
Exactly. You're free to disagree with someone's lifestyle, choices, beliefs, whatever. But what you can't do is use that disagreement to justify hate speech or discrimination. It's about promoting a culture of respectful disagreement, even on issues that we feel strongly about.
That's a really important distinction. It's not about silencing dissent. It's about making sure that dissent doesn't turn into something harmful.
Exactly. And at the end of the day, that's what this new legislation is all about, creating a Queensland where everyone feels safe, respected, and valued, regardless of their background, beliefs, or identity.
Okay, so we've talked about how the Australian approach to these issues differs from, say, the U.S. system. But what does this new law actually mean for people in Queensland? Like, what are the specific changes that everyone should be aware of? Let's get into the nitty-gritty.
Okay, let's dive into some concrete examples.
Yeah.
One of the biggest changes is how this new bill defines and deals with discrimination itself. They've expanded the definition to include things like, you know, gender identity, sexuality, and even variations in sex characteristics, which weren't explicitly covered before.
Wow, that's huge. So it's not just about protecting people from discrimination based on who they are, but also on how they express their gender or their biological sex characteristics even. That's really pushing the boundaries.
It is. And it's a recognition that discrimination can take many forms and that our laws need to evolve to keep up with the complexities of modern society. Mm. And this is just the tip of the iceberg. We haven't even touched on some of the other key areas of the bill, like the new protections for people with disability and the changes to how sexual harassment is handled in the workplace. There's a lot to unpack here.
There is a lot to unpack. And that's what we're here for. So let's dive even deeper into these specific changes and what they mean for you. Stick with us. Okay, so we've talked about those big changes in how discrimination is defined and dealt with under this new bill, but now I'm curious about how it's all going to work in practice, you know?
Right, because the real test of any law is how it actually plays out in people's lives, right?
Exactly. Like, what if someone's religious beliefs clash with those new protections around gender identity? I mean, that's a situation where things could get really complicated really fast.
Oh, absolutely. And it's something that lawmakers have been wrestling with, trying to find that balance between respecting religious freedom while also ensuring that everyone is protected from discrimination, regardless of their gender identity.
So walk me through it, because I'm a little fuzzy on how the law actually navigates those potentially tricky waters.
Sure. So basically, the law recognizes that people have the right to hold and practice their religious beliefs, but those beliefs can't be used to justify discrimination against someone else.
So it's like, you're free to believe what you want, but you can't impose those beliefs on others in a way that harms them.
Exactly. And that's where things get a bit nuanced, because the law doesn't completely erase the line between someone's personal beliefs and their actions.
Okay, so let's get real world here. Let's say someone refuses to bake a cake for a same-sex wedding because of their religious beliefs. How would this new law apply in that situation?
That's a classic example that always sparks debate, right? And honestly, there's no easy answer, because the law has to consider all sides. On the one hand, you have the baker's right to religious freedom, which the law respects. On the other hand, you have the couple's right to be treated equally, regardless of their sexual orientation, which the law also upholds. So it becomes a very delicate balancing act.
So how do you even begin to untangle that? What factors would the law consider in a case like that?
Well, for starters, the law would look at whether there was a genuine religious belief underpinning the baker's actions. It wouldn't be enough for them to simply say, oh, I don't believe in same-sex marriage. They'd need to demonstrate that this belief is deeply held and sincerely practiced in their life.
So it's not just a matter of personal preference. It has to be a genuine expression of their faith.
Right. And even then, the law would also consider whether there were alternative ways to meet the couple's needs without infringing on the baker's religious freedom. For example, could the baker offer to make a different type of cake or refer the couple to another bakery?
So it's about finding a compromise where possible that respects everyone's rights.
Precisely. It's a tough needle to thread, but that's what the law is designed to do, to balance competing rights and find solutions that promote fairness and equality while also respecting individual freedoms.
That's quite a responsibility. It really highlights the importance of having these conversations, even when they're uncomfortable.
Absolutely. This new bill, it's not a magic bullet, and it won't eliminate discrimination overnight, but it is a powerful tool for change, and it's up to all of us to engage with it, to challenge our own biases, and to work towards a Queensland where everyone truly feels like they belong.
Beautifully said. And on that note, I want to thank you for joining me for this incredible deep dive. This is a conversation that needs to continue, so I encourage you all to keep talking, keep learning, and keep challenging those outdated ways of thinking. Until next time.